A report from Mexico City on a series of people's caravans calling for the protection of Central Americans migrating through Mexico to the U.S. Also, it's been 1 year since Edward Snowden's first massive release of secret NSA documents. They'll speak to Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, about the multiple impacts of Snowden's actions. That is all coming up next on KBOO. Thanks for listening to KBOO Radio, and thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Voices on the Ground, Resistance and Resilience, with a keynote speaker on June 6th, an all-day conference June 7th at Portland State University. Voices on the Ground is hosted by the Social Welfare Action Alliance and the School of Social Work at PSU, with the goal of providing space for the larger community of activists and organizations to connect and engage students and the broader community in an effort to build meaningful, collaborative relationships. Again, that's Voices on the Ground, Resistance and Resilience, June 6th and 7th at Portland State University. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Today on Flashpoints, we feature an exclusive report from Mexico City on a series of people's caravans calling for the protection of Central Americans migrating through Mexico to the U.S. Also, it's been 1 year since Edward Snowden's first massive release of secret NSA documents. We'll speak to a former high-level CIA analyst about the multiple impacts of Snowden's actions. And police violence and shootings in Northern California reach epidemic proportions. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, it's been about 1 year. I think tomorrow will mark the 1 year anniversary of the beginning of the release of the Edward Snowden documents. And obviously this comes in the context of the Secretary of State making some kind of macho comment about it's time for Snowden to man up, come back to the United States and face the music. Many people feel the music he should face is that which celebrates the courage that he demonstrated in letting the world know the level of surveillance now being carried out by the United States government. Joining us to talk about this and also a few other important issues is our good friend Ray McGovern. He's a former CIA analyst of some 25 years. Ray McGovern, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thank you, Dennis.
Well, it's good to have you with us. In a moment, we're going to talk about your article about Bergdahl that appears in today's Consortium News. But I did want to talk to you about Snowden, this 1 year anniversary. And, you know, I mean, obviously, there's a lot more to say than respond to Kerry, but it was rather telling to see the Secretary of State come out of the corner swinging at Snowden, given the whole situation that this young man has essentially changed history with his revelations.
Yes, I would say you're right about that. Kerry has really done a 180-degree turn from the courage he did show right after he came back from Vietnam. I don't know what gets into a fellow like that. Maybe it's all those pastel ties that he has on his tie rack, but now he's become an effete bully. And not only that, he's never strayed on his facts. His relationship to the truth seems to be expanding in distance each time he opens his mouth. Now, if you take this latest thing about, well, you know, he should come back, that the Snowden should come back and man up. Well, yeah, I really object to this man up stuff. But let's look at that on his face. What he's saying is that Snowden should come back and face charges under the Espionage Act. Now, most Americans don't know that the Espionage Act does not let you defend yourself. And my friend Daniel Ellsberg was eloquent on that earlier this this week when he wrote, at his trial, he heard his lawyer ask the prearranged question in direct examination, quote, "Why did you copy the Pentagon Papers?" Now, Dan wanted to answer, but he was silenced. The government prosecutor objected, "Irrelevant." The judge sustained. My lawyer, exasperated, said he had never heard of a case where a defendant was not permitted to tell the jury why he did what he did, end quote. The judge responded, "Well, you're hearing one now." That's the Espionage Act. All that they have to prove is that Snowden released sensitive documents. In this case, there is a law against what we call comment or SIGINT, intercepted conversations and so forth. So that all the government has to do is establish that, and it's Snowden's away for 35, 40 years. The supreme irony here is that it was largely the coterie of Kerry and James Clapper and Keith Alexander that decided, or made Snowden decide to do what he did. He had been preparing to do what he eventually did, but when Clapper, James Clapper, who's head of national intelligence, that means he's in charge of all 18 intelligence agencies in our government, when he got up on the 12th of March, and in response to a question from Senator Wyden, who asked, "Mr. Clapper, does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or tens of millions of Americans?" "No, sir," was his answer. Well, Snowden knew that was a bald-faced lie, and it's just 12 weeks later, June 5th, that Snowden issues his, or releases the first thing, which shows that this blanket dragnet, what they call bulk collection, was extended to all of us. And Snowden said back a few weeks ago that when Clapper said that, he said, "Well, the jig is up. That's it. That's the last straw. I'm going to do what I consider to be the most patriotic thing to do." Now, I object to a fellow like Snowden being put on a pedestal and saying, well, he's either a saint or a hero. It's all too easy to knock saints or heroes off their pedestals, and it's also kind of a cop-out because most of us don't visualize ourselves as saints or heroes, and so it's easy for us as well. You know, that's Snowden, or, that's Ellsberg. I couldn't possibly do that. What these people are, Ellsberg and Snowden, in equal measure, are patriots, okay? And there are lots of evidences of that. When Snowden says that he was moved by the violations of the Fourth Amendment, the gross violations of the Fourth Amendment, which protects the privacy of Americans unless there is probable cause to suspect that they're a terrorist or a criminal of some of the kind. When he saw that being grossly violated, he decided to do something about it. Now, one of the things that never comes out is when one of his co-workers comes forward and says, you know, as this happened, now this happened about 5 months ago, one of his co-workers, although it was a woman, because women seem to have the more guts on these things, let's say she goes to Forbes magazine, okay, and she says, you know, I don't know if what it did is right or not, but my God, I really, really hate this character association. And then she told all manner of stories about, you know, how he was the best of the best. He rescued them out of every kind of technical difficulty. And then, you know, the kicker was here. One hint of his whistleblower conscience, aside from the telltale hoodie, the hoodie made fun of NSA, she said, Snowden kept a copy of the Constitution on his desk, the Constitution of the United States, to cite when arguing against NSA activities that he thought might violate it. So now we know that among his colleagues, who aren't themselves clear on whether he did the right thing, at least they're saying, you know, look, he's to track this dog-eared Constitution out. He's to argue from it and say, is what we're doing consonant with our obligations under our oath to protect the Constitution? We know also that he did, complain to his superiors. And what NSA has so far released is just the top of the iceberg. So there's a record of his complaints. And when people say, well, he should have gone through channels, he did go through channels. And when he saw what happened to Chelsea Manning, and when he saw what happened to Tom Drake, he said, look, if my major objective here is to succeed in telling Americans what's happening to their civil rights, and if there's going to be some prospect at all of my trying to be free and not put immediately in prison, then I can't do what the others have done. I've got to get out of Dodge. And he did. And I'll tell you, it was the most poignant moment of our meeting with Ed Snowden on the 9th of October. You may recall that Tom Drake, Jesselyn Radek, Colleen Rowley, and I had the privilege of meeting him in the in Russia. The most poignant moment was when we walked in, and Ed was already there, and he looked at me, and he knew who was coming. I didn't know him, you know, before. He said, hi, Ray. But then he spied Tom Drake behind me, and his eyes fixed on Drake. It was like a crystalline moment where he's thinking, my God, here's the guy. Here's the guy that spent 4 years doing the right thing, going through channels, suffered persecution as well as prosecution at the hands of 15 Department of, quote, justice, end quote, lawyers. And he's responsible for giving me an example of what I couldn't try to do if I wanted to achieve my mission and not to be in jail. And then I looked at Tom, and Tom's looking at Ed, and he's saying, my God, you know, I never thought that those 4 years of torture, pure torture, at the hands of our government could eventuate into any good at all. And he's looking at Ed, and he's saying, yeah, but this is good.
This is
so
good. Yeah.
What we have here is really a very courageous guy. A patriot is what I call him, not a saint or something else. And I think he's proved that. The good news, and what I just add here, is that NBC interview, I was amazed that they let him speak, that they let him press his case. It was nice, you know, it was, of course, de rigueur that the interviewer, after every segment, said, yes, but others say he's a traitor, yeah, but what others say, yeah. It was so clear that Edward Snowden has it hands down over John Kerry. And, you know, maybe if Snowden put on a blue tie, you know, pastel ties,
swaggered a little bit more.
I think he's in the same league, but right now, man, we've got a man up with these pastel ties. And
all right, okay. So it's important to remember it's been a year since Snowden. There's been incredible revelations. History, the world really has been changed, and the awareness of what happens behind the scenes in U.S. intelligence is obviously, this has been an epiphany for many, but we're running out of time, and I want to talk to you about your article, Ray, that came out today, Real Villains of the Bergdahl Tale, and it's about Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, and, you write here in the piece that came out today on Consortium, for me, Sergeant Bo Bergdahl's affair brings back angry memories of how in 2009, President Barack Obama caved into the bemedaled and beribboned generals like David Petraeus and ordered a modified limited hangout type surge of 33,000 troops in Afghanistan. Well, why does that make you mad when you think about that in Bergdahl?
Because that was cowardice. That was rank cowardice, and it was consequential cowardice. There's no way that a bright guy like Barack Obama can escape being held responsible for that. What he did was bow to the bemedaled generals because he didn't have the courage to say, well, this is another Vietnam. I know about those, and we're not going to get into it. He couldn't do that. And so as a result, he bought this half-assed plan, let's just say it, huh? 33,000 troops in for a while, but then they're going to all be taken out at a certain date. You know, it's sort of like a lawyer's plan, you know, to split the difference. Never made any sense. And it got 1,000 U.S. servicemen killed, and people like like Bo Bergdahl, changed for life. So, in other words, it was a ditto, it was a carbon copy of what Petraeus had discharged for the likes of Bush and Cheney, where he, too, did a surge, this time into Baghdad, and really put a cordon of U.S. troops around the Shia there and helped them ethnically cleanse what had been a predominantly Sunni city into a predominantly Shia city. And we're talking about 5 or 6 million people, huh? And what happened there? Again, 1,000 U.S. troops dead. Don't know how many wounded, just so that there could be a lull. So just so that the internecine fighting there in that area could be put down for a while, so that Bush and Cheney could ride off into the sunset. Another consequential cowardice, trading lives for political advantage. It doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat. That's what Obama did. And not many people realize that. And the Petraeuses of this world knew better, but they did it anyway.
So here comes Bo Bergdahl, Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. He's now called the deserter. Many people want him tried. He's a traitor. They want him killed. Your take on all of this?
Well, I think we really have to wait until he gets back. What I'm concerned about right now is, well, frankly, he's still in the hands of the army. I guess he's still in Germany, ostensibly being psychologically observed. I hope that his dad, who I know to be a really bright as well as conscientious person, and his mom have the strength of their convictions to make sure that they get a lawyer right in there, that they make sure they know what's happening to their son, and that whatever happens when he gets back, he has